Good morning and greetings to each one of you from our church at Baytree. We haven't been here as often as we would like to get here to visit, but each time we come, it seems like we learn to know more of you and feeling, I guess you would say, more and more comfortable among you as we learn to know more of you. And in enjoying our time here, we really appreciated the effort that went into the girls' camp there, and that our daughter Victoria was able to experience that, and just appreciate all the effort that you as a group put into that. You know, there's lots of details that we don't even know about that someone made happen. So appreciate that, and just have enjoyed the weekend being here again. Just want to encourage you, if it works into your schedule at all, to come visit us at Baytree. We enjoy visitors as well, and would enjoy to have any of you come and visit us there, get to know you better. Appreciated some of the thoughts that Josh shared in his opening here, just about letting our light shine and the increasing darkness in the world today, and I guess along with that, the increasing need for us to be a light and to let our light shine. And that's a little bit of a launching point, I guess, for the message this morning. Turn with me to the book of Matthew, chapter 14. This is a familiar story here of maybe one of the more familiar miracles that Jesus performed, the story of the feeding of the 5,000. And the title I've chosen for the message today is Five Loaves and 5,000 People. Now you look at those numbers and they don't really fit, do they? Five loaves of bread, 5,000 people. There's something wrong with the numbers. They don't really go together. And sort of the theme, sort of the theme for the message is that God delights in the impossible. You've probably heard the saying that God doesn't give us more than we can handle. I've used that expression, I've used that term, and we think, yeah, God knows how much we can handle. God doesn't give us more than what we can handle. The thought isn't original with me, but I'll come back to the source of the thought here. But I don't believe that's actually true, that God doesn't give us more than we can handle. Look at this story here. In fact, why don't we read it here? Let's read it first, and then we'll talk about it a little bit. Matthew chapter 14 and verse 15 says, "And when it was evening, his disciples came to him, saying..." Actually, I should just back up a little bit here. Jesus was I believe, on a mountainside, and was teaching the people and healing them, just ministering unto them, whatever needs the people had, he was meeting their needs. It says in verse 14, it says, "He saw a great multitude and was moved with compassion toward them, and he healed their sick." And then going into verse 15, and when it was evening, his disciples came to him, saying, "This is a desert place, and the time is now past. Send the multitude away, that they may go into the villages and buy themselves victuals." Now, maybe just pause there a little bit. These disciples were pretty practical men. They had probably been helping Jesus all day long, going through the crowds, finding sick people with needs, maybe widows, maybe young children, whatever, helping them come forward to where Jesus was and to receive a blessing and to be healed or whatever they needed. They were probably tired, and they were thinking, you know, we did a good day's work here. It's getting late in the day. It's time to go home now, and it's time to send these people home. They're getting hungry. There's nothing for them to eat here. They're going to have to go into the towns and buy food. Verse 16, it says, "But Jesus said unto them, They need not depart. Give ye them to eat. And they say unto him, We have here but 5 loaves and 2 fishes. He said, Bring them hither to me. And he commanded the multitude to sit down on the grass, and took the 5 loaves and the 2 fishes, and looking up to heaven, he blessed and brake, and gave the loaves to his disciples, and the disciples to the multitude. And they did all eat, and were filled, and they took up of the fragments that remained 12 baskets full. And they that had eaten were about 5,000 men, beside women and children." And when you read that story, you question that little statement that God doesn't give us more than we can handle. How were the disciples to respond when Jesus said, "You give them food"? They knew what they had. They knew that we have in our midst here, we have 5 loaves. And I don't know how big the loaves are, but I'm just guessing sort of an individual one loaf per person type of a size of a loaf of bread. I'm just guessing that's probably what it was. It's sort of a small, round, 6 inch diameter loaf. 5 of those and 2 fishes. And I was pretty sure, I checked several of the other Gospels. Matthew doesn't say it here, but John specifically says small fishes. So they weren't whales or anything that would have been possible to feed 5,000 people. 2 small fishes and 5 loaves. You say impossible. I would have said impossible. The disciples saw the need of the people, that they were hungry, that they needed food. They saw the little bit that they had, the little bit of resource, the very small means that they had to try to meet that. What I'd like to think about, several things that made it possible, 2 things particularly that made it possible for Jesus to work this miracle. 2 things that the disciples needed to do in order for it to be possible for Jesus to perform this miracle. First of all, they needed to have faith. You know, my response would have been, what's the point? 5 loaves, what good is five loaves among 5,000 people? And that, in fact, that's what they, I believe in one of the other Gospels, that was sort of their response. What are 5 loaves among so many? They could have said, this is ridiculous. Why even bother? Why, we might as well not even try, because it's not going to work. They needed to have faith. They needed to have just enough faith to take that first step, you might say, to bring what little bit they had, to bring it to Jesus. The second thing that they needed obedience. They needed to obey. Jesus said, bring what you have. They needed to bring that. Jesus used what little bit they had. That's what he started with, and was able to feed that whole multitude. And then he put them to work. He began to break that. If you can just picture with me, if you can imagine Jesus sitting or standing there, and he has in his hands 5 little loaves of bread and 2 fishes. He starts to break off pieces. Well, first of all, they says he looked up to heaven and he blessed, and then he break and began to give to his disciples, and his disciples began to distribute to the multitude. Faith and obedience. President Theodore Roosevelt made a statement. One of our children came home from school with this some time ago, and we had it on our refrigerator for a long time. Simply this: do what you can with what you have where you are. And really, I think that's what God asks of us. Do what you can with what you have where you are. And he takes it from there. He does the rest. That's really what Jesus was asking of his disciples here. He wasn't saying, he said, give them to eat. But he wasn't saying that you're going to have to feed them. He just said, start feeding them. Start with what you have. How often do we face circumstances like this where it looks impossible? The job looks just way too big, whatever it is. Or maybe it's an experience that God is calling us to go through, and we think, you know, we just can't handle this. We just can't go through this. I find it interesting that when the disciples presented the problem to Jesus and said, you're going to have to send them away, Jesus turned it right back around and gave it back to them. And sometimes God asks us, or he tells us, you have a problem, you go ahead and solve it. But he doesn't leave us on our own, and he didn't leave the disciples on their own in solving their problem either. But he says, you know, you have the solution, and we do. We see problems, we see needs, whatever they might be around us. Can we remember that we do have the solution? Sometimes we forget that. Sometimes we think that it's helpless. We think that we can't do anything to meet the need or solve the problem. But God often asks us, just like he asked the disciples here, gives it back to us, and he says, you meet that need. You solve that problem. You have the solution. I want you to be the channel of blessing. You know, the disciples were, I bet they were thrilled when they got started passing out this food and realized that, you know, it just keeps coming. It's not getting all. It's not getting depleted. I know it would have been thrilling for me to be involved in that. And if they had just sent everyone away, think of the blessing of that experience that they would have missed. So don't make excuses about our own ability or lack of ability or lack of resources, whatever. I had to think of just a little story I read one time about this little boy that wanted to help mow the lawn. He was maybe 4 or 5 years old, just a little guy, and you know what that would be like to turn a five-year-old loose with a push mower. First of all, it'd be dangerous. And secondly, I don't think he would get very far, depending on the lawn and the circumstances. This little boy really wanted to mow the lawn, and so his dad decided that he'll cater to that desire. And so he just kind of stepped back and held on to the handles, and he let the little boy walk in front of him. And the little boy was mowing the lawn. Dad was helping. But the little boy was mowing lawn. Sometimes I think we need to view ourselves like that little boy. We can't really do much by ourselves. We can't push the lawnmower, so to speak, on our own strength or with what we're able to do. But when God is leaning over us and pushing on that lawnmower too, things can happen, that the lawn can get mowed. So don't make excuses that I'm not strong enough, I don't have the ability, I don't have what it takes to do the job. And don't be a Jonah. Jonah, instead of being obedient to what God asked him to do, he turned and ran away. The disciples could have done that. They could have shook their heads and said, "This is pointless," and just left. But they didn't. They stayed, and they were obedient, and they did what Jesus asked them to do. Some time ago, our church goes in to town to an old folks' home a couple times a month, or we sing at two different ones. But the one evening, we were singing there, and I was noticing one of the doctors was in that evening and just in and out there a little bit. And after we were done with our singing and the little devotions that we do, he came up to Kevin Miller, the brother that was in charge that evening, and just gave him a package. And Kevin came to me later, and he brought the package to me. He said, "I think he was meaning this for you as a pastor." It was just a little paper bag, and inside of it were five little chocolate fish, little foil-wrapped fish, about the size of sardines, a couple inches long. Little chocolate fish, five of them. And on the outside of the bag, he had written something to the effect that, "I think there's a precedent in the Sermon by the Sea," or something to that effect. I think he was referring to this passage of the feeding of the 5,000, and it was five fish, not five loaves. But I was trying to think how I could work that into a message sometime, and I thought about it for a number of months, and how we could use those five little fish and bless the congregation there through a message or whatever. And so what I finally decided to do, it was probably a couple months after the incident, one Sunday morning I had one of the children from each family come up, and I gave each one of them a fish. And I said, "You can, as families, you can decide what you want to do with the fish, if you want to just divide it up between the children and eat it, or..." But the reminder that I wanted to leave was that just a reminder of the smallness of our ability, of our resources. You know, one little chocolate fish, it was the size that you would give to one child to eat, and I was only giving one to each family. But the smallness of our resources, but what God can do with that. Just a reminder of to illustrate that. The saying, a familiar saying, "Little is much when God is in it," and that's so true. God can take that little bit and do great things with that. Notice in verse 20, it says, "And they did all eat and were filled." It wasn't that they just each got a little taste, a little nibble. They were all filled. They all had sufficient. And as I was thinking about that, I was thinking where there's a need, or where people realize that there's a need, and here the need was that they were hungry. Secondly, where there is faith, where the disciples acted out of faith. And thirdly, where there is obedience, people can be filled. Needs can be met. But it takes all of these components, if you want to call it that, for those needs to be met. There can be ever such a need, such a desire for a need to be met. But if there's not faith that God can meet that need, if there's not obedience on the part of someone to step out in faith and attempt to meet that need, the need will go unmet. The last part of verse 20 says, "They took up of the fragments that remained 12 baskets full." Incredible how much more they ended up with than what they started out with. And the thought I got from that is that God's resources are never depleted. God never runs out, no matter what it is. God never runs out. He always has more. I already said that the title is Five Loaves and 5,000 People. And I'd like to just draw a bit of a parallel this morning here to our own lives, maybe, and you can make it personal to yourself. But the five loaves represents my ability, my resources, my meager resources, or what I have to work with. And the 5,000 people, actually it says 5,000 men beside women and children. So it could have been double that real easily. Don't know for sure. But the 5,000 people represents the needs, I guess you could say the needs of the masses, the needs of the world around us, whether it's right here in your community, whether you look at the broader picture of the needs within our country or the world. We know those needs all over, right from maybe next door to the furthest reaches of the world. And the burden for lost humanity, 5,000 people. Five loaves for 5,000 people. I find it interesting sometimes to think about numbers, and supposedly, according to what I heard some time ago, I believe a year or two ago, the world reached the 7 billion point of the population. 7 billion people. And I think often we don't have any idea of the vastness of that number of 7 billion. Probably most of us have maybe at the most seen crowds of, I would say for myself, as far as being in a place where there was a big crowd of people, the number might have been maybe 5,000 people, the most, some of you maybe more. 7 billion is a phenomenal number. If you were to count 7 billion seconds, just relating it to time to get an idea of how much 7 billion is. Does anybody have any idea how many years 7 billion seconds would be? Anyone? Grab your calculator real quick. Any guess? Years. Okay, anyone else want to try? 25. You're getting close to 1 billion. 1 billion years is, I believe it was 31.7 years. 7 billion years is 7 billion seconds, 222 years. 7 billion seconds, 7 billion people. So that means if 7 billion people would start walking out the door back there. 7 billion people, one person per second, would take 222 years for that many people to walk through that door. That's a lot of people. And that means a lot of needs. We know from experience that each one of us has our own needs, right? There's many people that have more needs than others, but each one of us are needy before God, and we have our needs. I was thinking about 222 years takes you back to, I didn't even write down, 1791, if you would go backwards 222 years. George Washington was president at that time, 222 years ago. And if you go forward 222 years or 7 billion seconds, takes you to the year 2235. probably most of us don't expect the world to stand that long. Pretty staggering numbers, but as we look at the population of the world, we see some staggering numbers and some staggering needs. Whether you're thinking about the people that are starving for lack of food, the people that are simply living just with the bare necessities of life. Maybe they have enough, but just barely. I don't remember the statistics, but the vast majority of population of the world lives on, I believe, $1, equivalent of $1 a day or less. Maybe you're thinking of the lost souls of that among those 7 billion people, or the suffering and sickness that so many experience, or maybe it's abuse that we hear about, that we're thinking of, or simply just loneliness and depression that people experience. But there are overwhelming statistics that when we see, read, hear, whatever, we think, you know, how can we help? Here I have 5 loaves, as it were, among 5,000 people. What can I do? What's the point? Might as well not even try, right? A book that I was blessed with some time ago, and some of you might be familiar with it, the title of it is Kisses from Katie. It's about a young girl that went to Africa, to Uganda, country of Uganda, and she committed her life to serving the people there. I just want to read what it says in the back here about this book, or about this girl. It says, "What would cause an 18-year-old senior class president and homecoming queen from Nashville, Tennessee, to disobey and disappoint her parents by foregoing college, break her little brother's heart, lose all but a handful of her friends because they think she has gone off the deep end, and break up with the love of her life, all so she could move to Uganda, where she knew only one person and didn't even speak the language?" Remember, the question started out, what would cause an 18-year-old girl to do this? The answer is a passion to follow Jesus. Katie Davis left over Christmas break of her senior year for a short mission trip to Uganda, and her life was turned completely inside out. She found herself so moved by the people of Uganda and the needs she saw that she knew her calling was to return and care for them. Katie, a charismatic and articulate young woman, is in the process of adopting, as a single girl, adopting 13 children in Uganda, and has established a ministry, Amazima, she calls it, that feeds and sends hundreds more to school while teaching them the word of Jesus Christ. Kisses from Katie invites readers on a journey of radical love down the red dirt roads of Uganda. You'll laugh and cry with Katie as she follows Jesus into the impossible and finds joy and beauty beneath the dust. Katie and her children delight in saying yes to the people God places in front of them, and challenge readers to do the same, changing the world one person at a time. And it was from her that the thought came from, that God does give us more than we can handle. God delights in giving us more than we can handle. And I want to read several verses that sort of build on that thought. Philippians chapter 4, verse 13. These are familiar verses. We could probably almost quote them from memory, but let's just read them. Philippians 4, verse 13 says simply this, "I can do all things through Christ, which strengtheneth me." A very simple verse, one we've probably known for years. I can do all things. I can even feed 5,000 people with 5 loaves and 2 fishes. I'm going to use that illustration or that comparison. I can do all things. I can do whatever it is that God asks me to do through Christ, which strengtheneth me. 2 Corinthians chapter 12. Verses 8 to 10. talking about something that the Apostle Paul was struggling with, and he wanted God to remove from his life. He says, "For this thing I besought the Lord thrice, that it might depart from me. And he said unto me, My grace is sufficient for thee, for my strength is made perfect in weakness." And then just skipping down to the end of verse 10, it says, "For when I am weak, then am I strong." And I think the reason he said that is because when we realize our weakness or our inability or the lack of resource that we have, then we can realize where the source of strength comes from, how the need can be met through the power of Christ, through the power of God. And then Matthew chapter 25, verse 40. One of the things that Katie really struggled with in her mission effort there, and what she had committed her life to, was just the vastness, the overwhelming statistics of the needs right around her there even. Everywhere she looked were children that had needs, children that were maybe orphaned, maybe malnourished, sick with whatever diseases and whatever the needs were. They were just all over there. And she really struggled with that. In fact, she struggled for a long time with anger at God. There were so many needs and that she couldn't meet them. But she said God brought her to this verse, Matthew 25, verse 40. It says, "And the king shall answer and say unto them, Verily I say unto you, inasmuch as ye have done it unto one of the least of these my brethren, ye have done it unto me." Unto one of the least of these. And she grabbed onto that, and she took that to heart, and she said, it was like God spoke to her and said, "All I'm asking you to do is to do this, do it for one, just one, and leave the rest with me. Bless one child today. Whatever need it is that's in front of you, do what you can to meet that need today. Don't worry about the rest." And she could look back and she could say, at the end of the day, she could say, "There might be a lot of needs yet, but at least there's one child that I comforted, that got fed, or that got their infested sores cleaned, or whatever it was, that at least one person was blessed today." And it was like God said to her, That's enough. It's okay. Just one. For her, it looked impossible, the bigness of it, all these needs, all these children. For us, maybe it's something different. Maybe what God is calling us to is something different. Another example I'd like to look at is Peter, just to think about Peter briefly, the Apostle Peter, when Jesus asked him to walk on the water. Just imagine, Jesus is walking across on the water toward this boat. The disciples are in the boat. Peter's sitting there, and Jesus asked him to come to him on the water. Peter had to have faith, first of all. He had to have enough faith to take that first step, to get out of the boat. I don't think I would have even got out of the boat. I mean, I know what happens to me when I try to stand on water. It doesn't work. But he had to have faith that Jesus would do what he said. And he had to obey. He could have never experienced walking on the water had he not taken that first step. And often that's all that God asks of us, is to take that first step. It looks big, it looks impossible, and if we don't take the first step, it won't happen. But if we do take that first step, God can work with us. Whether it's one child at a time, like it was for Katie, or one step at a time for us, or maybe it's just one day at a time. Maybe the bigness of things is is depression or discouragement or just the daily demands of life that overwhelm us and look too big. Maybe it's just one day at a time. That's all that God asks of us, just this day. Leave tomorrow for me to worry about. When we're thinking about the needs around us, we talked about the vastness of the population and the overwhelming statistics. I appreciate Katie's approach in the book I mentioned. Katie's approach to meeting the needs. She wasn't into some big organization that was top-heavy and hard to be efficient in reaching the needs, but she moved in among these people, lived among them, lived like one of them. She was one of them. She came alongside them and made personal contact with these children, adopting some of them as her own daughters. She was only allowed to adopt, according to the laws of Uganda, as a single girl. She could only adopt girls as her children. But she did what she could, and she did it in a personal way, living with them and living on their level. Jesus says in John 4, verse 35, he says, the fields are white, all ready to harvest. The harvest is ready. The harvest is there. The needs are there. And so what is our call individually? I think each one of us is called to some type of ministry in reaching out to other people. And I'm challenged by the involvement of your congregation here in so many things, whether it's the girls' camp this past week or the boys' camp that are either going on now or soon here. I'm not sure all your schedule there, but those are certainly ministries in reaching out and meeting needs of young people and preparing them for the challenges of life. Maybe the call is to foreign missions. There's many needs in that field. Maybe it's just on a daily basis at your place of work, your employees or fellow employees, people that you work with. Maybe it's within your family, as parents. Maybe it's our children. Maybe it's siblings, maybe it's in the neighborhood, but there are needs around us and there's a harvest that is ready to be harvested and the need is for reapers to do that harvesting. I have three men employed there, all three non-Christian men just from town there. And all three of them are either divorced or in mixed up marriage relationships. And there's lots of opportunities there and challenges for me, both by example, by the things I say, to show them the right way, to show them the love of God. I'm sure we all have, can think of needs that we know of. Just to remind us, those couple verses that we read, when we feel like we only have five loaves and it needs to feed 5,000 people. Remember, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. Remember that when I am weak, when I feel weak, when I feel at the end of myself, like I just can't do the job ahead of me, that's when I can be strong. When I am weak, then I am strong. Remember that God is the God of the impossible, that I think He delights in giving us more than we can do on our own. We know what it's like to, I think human nature, if I can do it on my own, I will, right? We kind of have that mentality. If I can do it by myself, that's sort of the way I'm natured anyway. I'd rather just do it by myself. God doesn't want us that way. God wants us to depend on Him, because He knows how much more He can accomplish if we do, as He works through us. God is the God of the impossible. I trust that as we view the needs of the world, rather than feeling overwhelmed, becoming overwhelmed and thinking about the statistics and the needs, let's just commit ourselves to God. First of all, have faith in what He can do, and then be obedient to take that first step in whatever He calls us to do in serving Him. And I think we will be amazed at how far reaching that can be. Could we stand together for prayer? And I'll turn it back over to Josh.